Hey, everybody. My name is Larry Herb. You know me as Xbox Live's Major Nelson. Thank you for coming to the panel today. I know it's a beautiful day out, and there's a lot cooler things you could be doing, but I really appreciate you being here. We got a great panel today for the next hour. We're going to be talking about podcasting and blogging, which have really changed the landscape of gaming for the past for the past couple 3 years. We're going to talk about that. Also, we are going to be taking questions. You can see the microphone right up here in the center. I am recording this for my own podcast, so if you don't wish to be on my podcast, well, don't ask a question on the microphone. We'll have to take care of that afterwards. But first of all, what I want to do is I want to go right down the alley here and start with Chris Grant, who's going to be shooting some photos. I apparently. So go ahead, Chris. And I'm going to shoot some photos as well as we go through here.
My name is Chris Grant. I'm the editor-in-chief of Joystick.com, a gaming blog.
Godfrey of Gamer Tech Radio. I'm also part of GamerCast Network.
I'm Ashley Jenkins. I am a community manager with Ubisoft, and I also work with the Frag Dolls.
My name is Michael Zinke. I'm the editor of the /.subsite/.games.
Thanks, guys.
Nope, sorry. I was going to plug my personal blog.
Go ahead.
Blog Nation, guys, if you like massive multiplayer games.
So, you guys have anything else you want to plug? Because we got plenty of time to do that. What I want to do is I want to kick it off. I kind of teased that at the beginning of the conversation about how blogging and podcasting from a media, from a publisher, and from just a blogging and community standpoint has really changed gaming versus perhaps any other industry at this point. Chris, we're going to start with you right here.
Well, I mean, it's kind of difficult to quantify. You know, I think a lot of the people in this room that are here for something like Penny Arcade probably realize that there's a lot of overlap between things like blogs and, you know, community sites like Penny Arcade. You know, the kind of older gaming press was kind of a monolithic structure that, you know, had a lot more in common or a lot more invested in the publisher and developer relationship than blogs do in the community aspect. So, you know, as a blog where you're kind of... you know, in a foxhole all day with, you know, the gaming industry, it's a little more rapid fire than the press originally was. So it kind of satiates a demand for somebody that would fly out to Seattle to go to a video game convention where you're kind of, you know, obsessed with gaming and obsessed with the news. And blogs did it in a way that was kind of uniquely detached from other interests. You know, blogs were... kind of an independent voice that wasn't afraid to illustrate a lot of the contradictions or BS in the gaming industry. And it was kind of a new voice for video games, at least. And, you know, obviously blogs have found a huge impact in other mediums as well and other kind of industries. So it's not unique to video games at all. But I think that's the reason blogs are on the cover of Newsweek and stuff, because they've had this effect in industries all over the world and all over the country.
Danny, how has it changed for you? You run a pretty successful website, and you have a huge podcast and a huge following. How has it changed for you? I mean, clearly, people are beating down your door to get some interviews on, right?
I mean, when I started like around 2000, before even podcasting, where podcasting even existed at that time. But I remember...
what did you call it?
Internet radio, I guess, or talk show or something. But at that time, I know... I got invited to my first community event was the Xbox Unleashed. That was like before the original Xbox got released, and I sat down with Microsoft and also Nintendo a week later. Like, and I told them about they had an internet radio show online, and they were like, "What is that?" You know. And years later, now like a lot of community sites are getting invited to check out behind the scenes on how, you know, developing a game, or if we have feedback, we could, you know, tell them right there, you know, at the event. So it's changing. And now a lot of major sites now are doing podcasting. You know, if you look up, if you do research, there's more podcasts than radio, if you look, you know, if you look it up and stuff. So, I mean, I've been going to a lot of events. I've been doing a lot of interviews every week, and they've been doing good, man. So
I want to go over to Ashley. Ashley, you work for Ubisoft. You work on the Frag Dolls. How have what these guys, and Michael, we probably should have Michael before you, but we'll get Michael afterwards. How have what the coverage that they have provided helped out Ubisoft?
Well, you know, I feel like, especially from a community standpoint, one of the great things about blogs is it's less polished a lot of times than you'd find in a print magazine. It also comes faster. It's more kind of grassroots. So it's... The coverage, and any time that a blog talks about, you know, our games, it feels very, very natural and very honest, and so it's much more community-oriented than some of what we had before, which was very, kind of professional and maybe a little bit more mystifying. Like, it put the game industry at kind of a distance from the gamers, whereas I feel blogs have actually, like, pulled gamers into being much more involved with games, both in development and everything going on around them.
Michael, do you find that to be true? I mean, you've been covering games for a long time over there at Slashdot, and you're huge. You know, you guys are like the original big blog, for lack of a better term, and games, big part of that. Are you finding that to be true? Is it better to be unpolished?
I'm not sure it's better per se, but it definitely gives a sort of authentic quality to what you're reporting. A lot of what Slashdot is taking the words of other people and turning them into a sort of a more readable format. And I think that's kind of what blogs are in kind of their best sense, is taking bits of information and adding personality and good writing to it and putting that out to people and letting them comment on it. I think the big change for blogs like Joyce and Kotaku more than Slashdot and other really good blogs is kind of the rise of personality as an element in reporting. People get to know bloggers, and they get to respect certain bloggers. And when you read coverage from certain bloggers, you know, okay, this is going to have this slant, but I agree with this blogger, so let's go for it.
So it's okay to be a fanboy?
In certain circumstances,
in certain
yeah.
circumstances, okay. Yeah. Chris, you've been working with Joystick for a while. I want to talk about where... some of the relationships you have with some of the other developers, I mean, and publishers, and in some cases, platforms. So specifically, you know, I'm up here. I work for Microsoft. I'm very open about that. You know, fortunately, we have Sony and Nintendo here. They have a different vibe when it comes to how they communicate with the community. I think everyone in the room will agree with that. What's your take on that? Are they getting better? What can we do as Microsoft to be better?
Well, I mean, this time last year at PAX. Different location, obviously. We had the same conversation. The question was, at that point, Microsoft was kind of unique in the way that they handled blogs and treated blogs, at least in terms of manufacturers. Some publishers were pretty good as well. And the question was, why don't Sony and Nintendo see the benefit of dealing with blogs on a professional level? And happy to report that since that time, Sony's had an epiphany of sorts, let's say. And but they've been, I think, very good about treating blogs not only with respect in terms of, let's say, you know, something simply metric like numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, we get traffic, you'll deal with other sites that are not blogs just because of their format. So it was kind of frustrating to have a certain size readership that you want to deliver compelling content to that you're unable to because of the way that you present it. So that's changed with Sony. Nintendo hasn't really changed much. I mean, Nintendo has a kind of static relationship that they... You know, I think they also have changed a lot in the fact that they're so successful now that I don't think they see blogs as a necessary ends anymore. They don't feel like they need the sponsorship or support of a site in order to succeed. You know, Nintendo fan sites, perfect case in point, there's 1,000 of them and they're Nintendo fans. You know, they're interested in getting that Nintendo fan's mom to buy their console now. So I don't think we've seen a decrease in Nintendo. We just haven't seen the market increase that we've seen from Sony and from myriad publishers. I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of the publishers are really starting to get on board. Microsoft has, you know, obviously been a kind of static presence this whole time, where they've been targeting blogs specifically in a very concentrated and direct way for years. So obviously sites like Joystick and Slashdot and much, much smaller blogs, you know, podcasts, have all, in a way, benefited from that. I think Microsoft's benefited from the coverage. And it's kind of like a give and take. You know, I think Sony... maybe unfairly blamed blogs for a lot of their missteps and thought that the blogs were, you know, almost benefiting at their expense and not really taking ownership of their failures to that point. But now that Sony has something to show off and they have some successes and they're finding that they're getting a very receptive audience in the blogosphere, they realize, I think, that it's not unfair. You know, they were being called out for failures and something that blogs did. It might have been a little cruel and it might have been, you know, there's millions of blogs. It might have seemed excessive to them, but... You know, I think that they weren't upset when all those same blogs were screaming, yelling about how great Little Big Planet looks. So,
one of the things that I can just say, working for Microsoft, obviously I can't speak for Sony or Nintendo. We have the GamerScore blog guys here somewhere out there.
GamerScore.
Pardon me?
They're around here.
The GamerScore blog guys, Tony and Sarah and John and Chris. And you know, they do that. They provide a very concentrated effort, and we speak every week about what you know, the vibe in the community. I mean, we have lengthy discussions. What we like to look at is blogs. Everybody at this table and everybody in this room really keeps us honest, and that's what we really like about it. Is that you guys and girls and the bloggers and the podcasters really keep us honest and make us talk about maybe things that probably in a normal. Maybe in a normal day, perhaps, I don't know, probably wouldn't be addressed as forefront as we like to do, to your point. And so that's why it's interesting you say that about Sony, because you're right. You got to live by the blogs, and frankly, you have to die by them. You know, they can be your friends, or they can be, I don't want to say enemies, but they can also come after you. That's the way it works. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, for me, what's the question? What do you like to know about?
We're talking about how the other publishers, you work, you know, Danny's had a little jet lag.
Yeah, this is like my first time, you know. No, but I know since day one, Microsoft always been stepping up to us about, you know, what they could help us in any way for, you know, for us to take podcasting to another level. I mean, recently, yesterday, for the first time, Microsoft gave us a chance to put our logos from our, we have a network called GamerCast Network.
Yep.
And for the first time, we have our logos now on the Xbox Live Marketplace. I mean, that never happened before. You know?
So just to let everyone know what Danny's talking about,
GamerPicks.
You can go home and you can download. There's a free PAX, I guess it's a PAX pack, of all these different gamer network.
It's free. So, I mean, if we get community support, right there we getting our voice out there saying Microsoft that, you know, we have a strong community out there. And, you know, anybody out there that want to like, support and download, and that would be cool. So, I mean, this is going to open the doors for other community sites out there too. So,
Ashley?
Do you want me to address how Ubisoft is?
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I know that from a publisher standpoint, we do have a love-hate relationship with the blogs. Because, of course, like, we want to see the good things. And, you know,
nothing
we don't want to see the bad things. But also, it's true. It does keep us honest. You know, if we do something that is maybe not the best decision we could make, then we're going to get called out on it. And so that does put some pressure on us, and it's a good kind of pressure to make sure that, you know, we make the right decisions and that we're doing things that the gamers and community approve of, because I mean, that's the key influencers who are going to, you know, make the internet go crazy if we do something bad. So, you know, it does mean that in a way we as a publisher do become more answerable directly to the gamers, which is a good thing in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, from my perspective, we don't really look for more of anything really from any of the big three folks. It's whatever news comes along. I am the alpha and the omega of Slashdot Games, so I can only post so much every day. But really, I think the honesty element that we've all touched on is the most interesting, entertaining thing about blogging as a format for me. Being able to have less than 24-hour turnaround on news, the speed that Grant was talking about, just being able to, who's Grant, is that it's just a wonderful thing. It's something that I know when I was growing up in the ye old Nintendo days, when I was, you know, very young, was something I would have enjoyed a lot. So.
We're going to start at the other end and come back this way this time. I want to talk about, in front of us are sitting, you know, 100, 200 people. What are some tips that you can give them for their blogs and their podcasts to really make a difference? And how do they, you know, we all had to get started somehow. I remember the very first podcast I did was all of, I think, like 12 minutes. Now they're like 2 hours. And I'm sure we all have strange stories in the back of our minds of how we got started. But what kind of tips can you give the audience here and people listening when they download my podcast, how to get started?
No Grant.
Consistency, I think, is one thing that I really think is a good word to keep in mind when you're doing blogging. Is if you're gonna blog, and you're gonna blog 3 times a week, then blog 3 times a week. If you're gonna blog once a day, do that.
What do you do when you don't have something to talk about? Because sometimes there's low. I mean, you're not going to make stuff up like Kotaku.
Oh,
come up with a rumor. Ooh. Yeah.
Crescente, you should have been here. All right,
kicking the guy that's not in the room. Oh. Well, it's not so much making stuff up as there's always stuff out there. I mean, even if it's just people talking about things in forums, there's always something that you can talk about that's not. That's not rumor. It's not pure rumor. You can take conversations that gamers are having and turn it into a discussion based in fact, and have that be what you want to put out there on your blog. So even if there's not a specific story that you want to talk about during the day, I would encourage people to always keep to a schedule if you can. And when there's a hole in that schedule as far as something really meaty, go out there and look for it, because that's what makes blogs really interesting, is the passion of the posters.
Yeah, just before we get to you, Ashley, I noticed that I always have two or three things in my drafts folder which I want to talk about that sometimes I don't get to because, frankly, I'm posting all the marketplace garbage, which will go away soon. It's just that. It's just about there's certain things you want to talk about. In my case, I tend to drift a little bit and talk about technology and whatnot, but it's just having those two or three things in the back of your mind that are always interesting.
Yeah, I agree. Number one, consistency is a big thing. As someone who I don't, blog professionally, but as someone who does read blogs, if the site's never updated or if it's updated inconsistently, I'll stop going there. And the other thing is to have a personality. I could read white papers all day long, and I can fall asleep. But if I'm going to do something that's entertaining, I want a personality. I want to feel like I'm reading someone's real thoughts.
You want to be entertained.
I want entertain me. Yes.
And as for the podcast, I mean, be active. I mean, for me, I'm not like you guys, daily news and stuff. But I mean, for us, like we involved with the community, so I rather. If there's nothing going on, I'll get community members from different sites, get together and, be part of the podcast and have, roundtables.
That's your version of what I have in my drafts folder. You've always kind of the
You got to do that more. I mean,
right.
I mean, we listen to you. We have a lot of, you have a lot of fans. So
right.
Why not invite, other sites to your show? You invited us, during E3 and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'll tell you, to your point, and I love having other people on my show. I've had, I think, everybody here on this. Have you been on the show?
Nope.
All right, we got to get slashed on.
Next week.
All right. But, it's just one of those things where, my podcast is kind of what I do outside of my regular job. Yeah. So it's just one of those things where you're absolutely right. And I will take your challenge.
There you go.
I will take your challenge.
Yes.
I would, reinforce consistency, but also quality. It's not a problem I think most professional blogs have, but... you read a lot of smaller blogs, and if I start reading a blog and it's, full of spelling errors and it's sloppy and, it's generally poorly written, I'll stop reading. And, I just don't have enough time in my day to, work through somebody's spelling errors. It just reinforces a sense of laziness or lack of care on the part of the author. And blogging is writing. I mean, it's a writing job, whether or not you're getting paid for it or not. But if you're going to spend your time writing, you should at least take pride in the product you produce.
Yep.
So a lot of bloggers tend to kind of treat it almost like a text message. It's a stream of consciousness, and I would encourage those people to, proofread, basically. It sounds hard. But use full words. Remember your punctuation. I mean, it sounds crazy, but, reading a couple hundred blogs a day, you see it over and over and over again. It really does distract from any good content that might otherwise be on there.
Have you guys seen – how are you working with mainstream media? And Chris, we'll start with you. In terms of, you've got the New York Times. We just came back from, we're just off of a month and a half ago coming from E3, where you're sitting in a room with maybe the guys from Time Magazine and so forth. How's the traditional media viewing guys when you bump into them out in the, at events?
Well, that role's changed a lot even in the past year. Look at a perfect example. Take Newsweek.
Mm-hmm.
Newsweek, big mainstream outlet. Their tech editor, N. Guy Kroll, covered games for Newsweek magazine maybe every other week, maybe a couple hundred words, not a lot of coverage. He started a blog, and because of the scale of Newsweek and the size, publishers are willing to give him tons of interviews because of his connections and because of his professionalism. And his blog is producing amazing content, right? And so it's a blog, but it's also got the backing of a mainstream magazine.
Is that the future? Do you think that hybrid is the future?
I mean, no. I don't think it's the future in any... I think the future is way grayer than that. The future is going to be an enormous hodgepodge of everything. You know, it's the internet. It's a cacophony of voices. You know, you're not going to be able to single anything out and say that that's the way things are going. I think we've already reached a balkanization of media on the internet, and that's only going to get more and more balkanized as the tools become easier for people to adopt. But you look at an outlet like Newsweek, or you look at the role of sites like Joystick in the process. And you know, I talk to a lot of people that write for major newspapers or magazines, or they'll contact me to get comments for stories. And a lot of times, sites like Joystick will start the ball rolling, and a week and a half later, you'll read about it in the New York Times. You know, and it takes a little while to get there, but you know, Joystick could write about the Red Ring of Death for 6 months before it hits a mainstream, you know, audience. So there's a certain symbiotic and cooperative aspect to the way that mainstream media deals with blogs. I think a lot of them are also dealing with it in a way of, you know, jumping in the pool, mm-hmm. playing along.
Well, I have a problem with a lot of major sites. They sometimes take advantage of, like, the smaller sites and would take news that have been posted, and they don't give credit to those that have been, you know, giving it out there to the community. So, I mean, Joystick always be giving, like, credit to, like, to us or whoever had been giving them tips and stuff. So, I mean,
do you want to give any names? I'm sure they want to know.
Well, Kotaku, but I'm just saying, like, it bothers me. I mean, there's a lot of sites that are getting paid, and we're not. We're doing it out of, you know, out of love and you know, for fun. But at least give credit for us. You know, we need traffic at least for our name to get out there. You know,
I think one of the things that blogs do also is that you have that, you know, the conversation, if you want to call it that. But you know, you can follow stories around, you know, 30 links deep to find out where it started from. But you know,
well, not my story though. I'll tell you that much.
On Joystick, we run via tags. Yeah. You know, we try and give credit wherever we found it first. If there's a source, we like to always link directly to the source. If that mm-hmm. source is a press release, we'll link to that. If the source is another blog, a forum, mm-hmm. a mainstream newspaper article, whatever it is. But there tends to be almost an overemphasis, almost an obsession on mm-hmm. blogs with citation, you know, illustrating where it came from and pointing to sources. Mm-hmm. And it's something that you don't necessarily see in the mainstream newspaper where firsthand reporting is really praised. So, yeah, you'll see a lot of your leads duplicated on other sites without credit. And it's something that Joystick, I mean, not only can I point to 150 sites that just scrape our RSS content and put ads on it with a new URL, so whatever, but... you know, mainstream sites, yeah, we see our stories on them all the time with no credit 6 hours later. But, you know, it used to be worth getting upset about and, you know, doesn't really bother
just
me
keep
at all
it
anymore.
So.
Yeah, as someone who deals more in community and really like just with the things like blogs and podcasts, I can't really speak to the difference between things like, you know, like Newsweek, like the really mainstream outlets, because we do have wonderful PR people for that. But yeah, speaking to the idea of blogs being a little bit obsessed with citation, I kind of feel like that's been something that, at least in the beginning, was blogs trying to fight for the concept of legitimacy. Like, this isn't just a rumor. This isn't us just posting something because we dreamed it and we thought it would be awesome to post, but because it's something that's real and being talked about. So it's kind of... The citation, like a bibliography, it's proving that, you know, your book is real and it's based on fact.
It's also etiquette, the same way a bibliography is etiquette. You know, you're acknowledging where you got something from. And a lot of people will, in a pejorative sense, call blogs news aggregators, you know, copy-paste monkeys, whatever you want to call it. But when you actually sit down to do the job, you realize that it's a lot harder than you think. You know, that process of citation is proper blog etiquette, and it's kind of a tip of the hat. So when you don't get it, it's, you know, a lack of etiquette. So, yeah, a lot of the other sites that aren't blogs, I tend to not get upset anymore when they don't tip their hats. But.
on Slasher, at least, I would join you guys in saying that I always try to make sure that citations are done correctly. There's a lot of people who submit to Slashdot by just cutting and pasting into the little text box. It's like, that's not going to cut it, guys. Thanks for trying, though. As far as dealing with major media, I think while it is kind of you folks to have me here, and it's kind of all of you to at least pretend you know where I post things, Slash is still kind of a niche site in many ways with technology. So other
with a
than
a ton of traffic,
yeah, he's lying. I've
real
seen
niche
site. Sites get slash dotted. Well. The fact that it's a verb, it speaks to it. All right.
Sorry, I'm from the Midwest. The deal is, I mean, aside from some very favorable interactions with folks like Engai Kral and Steven Totillo from MTV, who's another person who's kind of doing this hybrid approach to traditional media and blogging, Slashdot doesn't have a whole lot of interaction. That said, I think that this hybrid approach that has been spoken of a couple times is definitely the best way to go about it, because with folks like Engai and Steven, it's really the best of both worlds. You get someone with professionalism, resources, that sort of thing, and the immediateness of a blog. And I really hope that we see more, as you said, more media sites going in that direction in the future.
I want to turn it around a little bit and ask you guys how you deal with this river of news. And we've all got, you know, I want to know how many RSS feeds you subscribe to.
Too many.
And kind of how you deal with that, and how do you parse it out in your own? Because we've all been doing it for a while. I know I subscribe to, I think, 180. And it's almost like, you know, I've been on vacation for the past few days. It's almost like I'm dreading going back and reading them. You know, just mark all as read and start new.
Yeah, I mean, workflow is a really important part of professional blogging. Joystick's got over 300 RSS feeds that we watch as a team. And it doesn't mean that we have to watch everything. You know, there's ways that we can index things and prioritize things. But in general, yeah, it's important to be on top of news. One of the ways that we do it is, or at least the way I do it, you know, specifically, if I'm not actively watching feeds, somebody else might be. I'm not afraid to mark all as read.
Tips.
I can. You know, tips are really tricky in all kinds of other ways. But a lot of times you'll get, you know. I mean, probably 50% of our tips sometimes seem like they're just BS, and you have to filter through them.
How do you deal with that? What's your BS meters? It just
our BS meters are usually set to overload. So, you know, like just doing anything on the internet, you know, you have to be really skeptical. And it doesn't mean we don't get duped. Sure, it happens all the time. You know, but when we mess up, we run a public update. It's up. You know, usually our first commenter on the post will tell us, you know, you guys are assholes.
Can I ask you a question, Grant?
Sure.
What if a company steps up to you and gives you the news? Like, I know you guys had a situation with Nintendo, right?
We get press releases. Yeah. We try and find all the press releases.
No, but I'm talking about, like, how companies sometimes will come and might hype it up and, you know.
Oh.
That, you know, it will cause, like, a little hype in.
Where it's like the biggest announcement ever, it's going to change video gaming.
Yeah, that's
history,
one of them.
Like that one. Let's just cut to the chase here. Okay, we got to be real.
Yeah. No, I'm saying. Yeah.
So, there are situations where hype, which is a deadly vice in the video game industry, can get the better of some people, and you know it's just important to be vigilant about it. You know, we've obviously made our mistakes. You own up to them. And, you know, like anything with blogging, it's about being honest and being upfront. So, you know, like making a mistake on a single post, you fix it, you explain the error, you take your lumps, you know, done deal.
I mean, I made that mistake, so what advice you give, like, for me and others out there, like, you know, so it won't happen again, so, I mean.
Well, you know, it's important to be skeptical, you know. Basically, situations with hype, you know, usually it's best to ignore it. You know, your job in the media as a blogger, as a podcaster, isn't to market other people's products. Let them do their marketing. It's not your job. Okay. But it's important to be honest. You know, if you're excited about a game, you know, last week I don't think I could have written enough stories about BioShock. I could have spent all day writing posts about BioShock, and it wasn't because 2K was paying me. It wasn't because
you got the free game, or
I went to Toys R Us and picked up copies early and gave them away to readers.
Good. All right.
You know. It's about, you know, it's that honesty. Gamers wanted to read about BioShock. We want to write about it. You know, that's a good confluence there. And so, you know, was that hyping their game? Sure. They made a great game that people were excited to hear about. And that's a little different than, you know, just giving flat-out hype for a simple announcement. But, yeah, in terms of messing up, yeah, you be honest. You fix your mistakes. You move on. Cool. In terms of workflow... workflow is a really important thing for anybody that handles that amount of data, and it just means improving your technological reliance on a lot of these things. So use RSS instead of going to websites. It saves you a lot of time.
Okay.
I use Gmail personally. I can't use any other email client. If I use another email client, I pull my hair out. Gmail handles massive amounts of email. massive amounts of comment threads that we get, and I can do it all really quickly. I can do it on my phone. I can have access to, you know, a gig and a half of email on my phone from anywhere. But there's a certain amount of reliance that you have to put on technology, and you have to be willing to move on if you're behind. You can't hang up on it. So like you said, mark all as read. Don't worry about it. I know a lot of people read the Today in Joystick post we run once a day because they're not going to refresh the site 40 times a day. And they go there at the end of the day or early in the morning, read what the day was before, and move on.
Yeah, there's a lot we've noticed, or at least I've noticed. I mean, there's definitely the class of people that are hitting refresh every 5 seconds on
your
site.
Yeah.
And those are the guys, and I'm sure we've all seen those on Slashdot and whatnot, those, right. The first commenters. They really have nothing better to do with their life.
It's just one guy doing all
it. It is just one guy?
Yeah,
okay.
One guy doing all
But it's you know what I found when I first came here, you know, like I said, I've had family and I've been offline for the past couple of days. The first thing I did was talk to E, who hosts my podcast with me. He's in the back of the room. I said, what did I miss? You know, what's going on for the past few days? And he kind of gave me a bulleted list, and okay, we move on. So it's just, you almost, in addition to your RSS reader, it's also your social and professional network. I mean, I clearly can't go home and ask my wife, hey, what did I miss today in gaming? And she's like, I have no idea. You know, but it's really coming up with the right people to ask the right things. Danny, let's go on to you. How do you, what's your workflow?
I mean, I already said my thing, so let's move on.
Pass.
I'm one of those people, I hate to get behind on knowing what the news is. I'll be like, wait, what happened? That happened a half hour ago, and I didn't know
right. What's
going on. So, it's really important. I generally hit a couple of major sites. And then, you know, that becomes important for us as publishers as well. Not only do we know everything that's going on, and then we can, we actually implement RSS feeds on our websites as well, so that anytime there's a news post, people can find out immediately. So that... You know, we can get our updates to people who are looking forward to the games, or, you know, if we've got a tournament or something like that that we really want to promote an event, say, you know, we're going to be showing this game at PAX, that can go directly to people without them having to come to the website, although we do like them to come to the website.
I would really love some sort of, like, implant technology that would allow me to sort information a little bit better. I think the last time I added a RSS feed to my post, I was over 600 RSS feeds. I'm kind of retarded that way. I use Google Reader to speak to Gmail. I love Google Reader so much. I have like 300 of those are for mainstream game stuff, and then I'm really passionate about massive multiplayer games, so that's another 150 RSS feeds. I spend a lot of time clicking. And then on top of that, I have the Slashdot Firehose that I have to kind of maintain abreast with what's going on the website and that sort of thing. So in some ways, my whole day is workflow management. And my wife would tell you I do a poor job. The bottom line is that I need to do exactly what you're talking about, is move on all the time, constantly.
It's painful every time.
Yes, it's extremely painful.
But do you guys feel
so
bad when
for
you,
me to do.
To your point, Ashley, do you guys feel bad if you don't have that top story if somebody else broke it a half hour before you?
No.
I used to, but I mean, you can't you can't win them all. I mean, you keep doing the best job you can, and you win some, you lose some.
But at the same time, it's really fun just to know something, and someone else will post it, and like, it was recorded, and it's like, yeah, I knew that. I heard about that. What, you didn't know already?
You didn't know? 10 minutes ago. That's old news.
Yeah.
Oh.
This is the internet. God.
Yeah. I want to move on a little bit. We're going to start taking questions in a few minutes for the last 20 minutes or so of the session. But I want to move on and talk about the vocal minority. Specifically, we've all posted stories and whatnot. It seems like there's a bunch of haters for whatever it is, whether it's Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo. How do you look at your comments and the communication, the stream of data coming in, other than, you know, what you're outputting as the post, but the interaction that you have with the community, and how do you say, wait a minute, this isn't just three or four angry people, this is actually an issue?
I think Michael's probably best
qualified.
Yeah,
I was going to say, if I could jump in with that one.
Sure.
Go for it.
So the best way to describe Slashdot readers is cranky.
Now is that games, or is that just across the different channels?
It's across all the channels.
Okay.
And it's a good if there are any Slashdot readers in the room, it's a good cranky. I love the Slashdot cranky. And what that cranky means is, they're on the site And only a very, it's just like with any other medium, only a very small percentage of people actually post a Slashdot, and the people that do care really deeply about whatever it is they're posting about. So if you see a post on Slashdot, unless it's Frist Post, most of those comments are going to have some merit to them. So with this last question, the comment stream is another channel that you have to take into account when you're dealing with all this stuff. The way that I deal with it personally is by not taking anything personally. And then the next part of that is going on and seeing all the elements in the comments that that obviously are people who are for whatever's going on in the post and whatever people who are against this. And I try to moderate up, because Slashdot is a comment moderation system, I try to moderate up whoever's making a decent point. If there's someone who's really kind of hitting the nail on the head for whichever side they're arguing, I'll moderate up the best posters on both sides and really get the comment storm going as best I can. That's kind of where I come from.
Joystick's a little different than Slashdot, obviously. Our comment traffic isn't as heavy. I mean, Slashdot has a huge system. Slashdot also has a really sophisticated but complicated and or cumbersome ranking system.
The cranky folks like that, apparently.
They do.
It's perfect for Slashdot readers. So for Joystick, I mean, one of the things that we have a problem with is, you know, there's always things with hate speech or swearing or personal attacks. And
taking it too personal?
Stuff, yeah, a lot of that stuff gets banned right away. Like, hate speech, you know, it's a ban.
But you know what it is, too? Like, a lot of readers, they trust us. You know, they know that we are connected some way with one of these companies, so they will come and, you know, and talk to us and give us, even if it's a little bit too much, you know, but
I mean, I think I think comments are really important. There was a recent debate on the webs recently about whether or not comments were integral to blogs. And
are they?
Well, this guy's consensus was that, you know, you don't need comments to be a blog. Comments are actually antithetical to blogging because it helps crush the individual voice. It makes you want to temper what you say or be a little more diplomatic because you want to appease everybody. That was his logic, basically. But, you know, I think, you know, like I said previously, you know, if we mess up, our commenters are there usually right after the first post guy to let us know that we messed up. And that's a huge value for us. I mean, it makes sure that we're accurate. It keeps us on our toes because we don't want to post a public update saying we screwed up. But also keeps our content up. You know, like, you know, we know that anything that's inaccurate on the site should be corrected pretty quickly. But it also gives people a place to talk about this stuff, and it gives you know, readers free content. You know, they can go through and read those posts, and sometimes they're really interesting or good. What we've recently done on Joystick, in lieu of banning more people, is added peer moderation. It's a lot simpler. We use cute little Zelda hearts. Basically, if you leave a comment and your peers vote you up, the comment becomes darker, higher contrast, and if you get voted down, the text becomes lighter to the point where it gets almost completely whited out. So it offers a visual metaphor for the value of your comments. You can kind of quickly scroll through our comments now, and if it's a worthless comment, you know, you can barely read it. I think that's helped. I mean, I'm serious. I think it's helped a lot.
How long have you had that system in place?
Just about a month or so.
And you felt it's really made a difference?
I think it's already made a big difference. You know, we have public comments. You don't need an account. You don't need a login or anything. You just leave an email and activate it.
So you probably get a lot of spam bots, huh?
No. Well, that's what the email activation helps to prevent. Okay. We still get some spam, but the system's pretty good that we have. Because it's public and open, you know, people feel, you know, there's even more anonymity than other gaming blogs or other, you know, blogs that have comments. So it kind of encouraged a negative audience. And it's always been an uphill battle. I mean, the larger we get, the more it happens. So this latest offensive on our part seems to be helping, and I'm sure that at some point it'll stop working and we'll have to do something new again. But it's always an uphill battle. I mean, it's like Will Wheaton mentioned yesterday in his keynote, the greater internet fuckwad theory. People plus anonymity plus internet equals fuckwad. And it's pretty accurate. I mean, it's amazingly accurate. You know, you meet people who can scream and yell at you all the time on the internet because you're, you know, just a name. And you meet them in real life, and, you know, it's a 4-foot-tall guy who's a puppy dog. And you're like, that's kind of weird.
It's like, hi.
I do just want to jump in really quick with a comment, because it's something that's kind of straight to the heart of my job every day. A blog isn't a blog without comments. That's the bottom line. Slashdot.
Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Slashdot, for me, I'm worthless. Like, there's no reason for me to be there if it's not to foment comments. If I'm not getting comments on a blog, my boss views it as a failure on a blog entry.
So the number of comments is a metric for success for you?
Oh, very. I'm mostly joking. It's very loose. It's very loosely, but like that is really the core of what Slashdot and I think many other blogs are all about is getting people talking and getting interesting ideas out of the average person.
Well, it depends. I mean, on Joystick, if we run a post about Jack Thompson, we'll get 50 blogs in a row. God, that guy's a douchebag. What's his problem? Yeah. And we run a post on an indie game that looks really good, and we get like one person saying, that game's pretty cool. Like,
it's controversy, right? Controversy.
Yeah, I mean, people like to talk about, you know, a couple hot topics. And, you know, we have material for them usually every day. But, you know, I don't equate comment traffic as a direct metric to value of a blog post or success of a blog. There's a lot of great blogs that I read. You know, pick Stephen Totillo's multiplayer blog. He might get 3 or 4 comments for a post. It's a fantastic blog. It's my first read every day.
Yep.
But I don't see that 3 or 4 comments as being a failure for his post.
I know when a lot of people from the Xbox community point of view, when they're pissed off, they right away go to majornerdism.com to post, you know, Major, what's wrong?
Commenters.
I mean, you get a lot of hate on your blog too. So and love, but I mean, how you handle that, Major? I mean, it's your job too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, really, so. It's to what you guys are saying is you don't take it personally. Yeah. I'm glad that these folks have an outlet to talk. And, you know, to Chris's point, you know, I don't let them post their hate speech and whatnot and don't attack each other. And I always say you're more than welcome to post as long as it's kind of, you know, properly formed sentences and you're making
but
sense.
But with that, you give feedback to your team, too.
Like, oh, absolutely. You know, we take that data and everybody on our the Xbox team does read my blog and they'll send me links to different comments and say, hey, do you have that email? I want to get in touch with them and ask them what they meant. Mm-hmm. So it's really meant as a way to really get more data from the community. But yeah, I mean, people attack me and hate me and, you know, I've had death threats. So.
And you meet them in real life and they're puppy dogs. So.
Yeah, exactly. They are that 4-foot guy who says, first post. I'd like to, for the last 15 minutes or so, I want to kind of bring it up and open up the thank you. Thank you very much.
John Picaro.
Excuse me.
First post.
Excuse me.
All right, so we're going to, if you would just say your name, please.
Minus one off topic.
All right.
We're going to start here, say your name, and if you're with anybody, and then we'll try to go through the questions as quickly as possible.
All right, my name is Patrick O'Connor, and I'm with defunctgames.com. And,
sorry, go ahead.
Anyhow, just as a little side note to the first post comment, I was reading a post you put up about, I don't know how old it was, but you put the achievement sound.
Yep.
And about 3 posts down, about 5 minutes after the first comment, someone put first post.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they understand.
Well, what's interesting, to your point, what's interesting is on my blog, and I don't know how the other guys work, but I have a pretty heavy caching system. So even though the first post, they may not see anything there. There may be 15 posts already in the queue that are going to go live in a couple of minutes. So it's a moving target. So
it's slightly humiliating for them, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's very humiliating. So
my main question, which kind of has a sub question to it, is that what kind of value and stock do you put into websites like Dig.com or Delicious or websites?
Twitter.
Huh?
Twitter.
Have Twitter.
Websites that help share blog posts, like Technorati, that help share posts around the internet.
I mean, for us, you know, Delicious hasn't been a huge traffic generator. Reddit isn't a huge traffic generator. StumbleUpon tends to do really well for us. You know, if we have a weird post about, you know, somebody with a Katamari life-size ball that in their backyard, like, for some funny reason, that'll make it on StumbleUpon, and we'll get a ton of traffic, and it's very strange. Dig is a huge traffic generator, of course, mostly for breaking news. The thing with Dig is, you know, you have to be careful about the Dig community. In general, if we promote our own stories on Dig, you know, by putting a widget in our post, it's for original reporting or for breaking news that we broke ourselves. You have to be careful about, you know, and a lot of times, you know, 99% of our digs are reader submitted, and you know, they could submit something that isn't our story. We just picked it up from somebody from 5 hours ago. And all of a sudden, it hits Dig, gets a lot of traffic, and then people yell and say it's not the original source. And it's true. I mean, it's not. You know, Dig's rules are very specific, linked to the original source. So, Dig is clearly a traffic generator. When you see Dig buttons on the New York Times, it's pretty obvious that...
Are they just trying to be hip and cool, though? I mean, clearly the New York Times doesn't need the traffic.
It helps. I'm sure if you told the New York Times, hey, I'll give you 50,000 free page views, what do you say? Obviously they're not going to turn it down. That's why they have a little budget button on their page. But all those sites are helpful. I mean, those sites are more helpful for me because we can look at a site like Dig and, because it's tag-based. Same with this is where Technorati is really helpful. Because it's tag-based, you can pull stories from the tiniest blogs from the corner of the internet that you would never have found otherwise. And that's really where those services are enormously valuable as a kind of...
IMCA credit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
these little sites will get picked up by Dig, and a lot of times, it's not that they get a lot of digs; they don't hit front page, but they'll put their own thing on Dig, and then people find it, and if a site like Joystick hits it, and then the Dig story gets up a little bit. But
sometimes Dig might get you the story from your site.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like,
That's the negative. A lot of times it's a reader submitted Dig, obviously those services are helpful. I think that's the whole Web 2.0 thing, and it kind of creates the larger community. So you can look at tags for all this stuff and follow it throughout all these different services.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen a lot of pickup for Reddit or some of the other ones in the gaming sector, at least. Not a lot of traffic.
Ashley?
Yeah, we found that that Dig is really great for community-related things with Ubisoft, especially. I know that one particular example was we were doing Star Wars, and there was a mini game where you could build your own Death Star. And someone dug it, the first day, and then it was all over the place. And we put it up, someone dug it, and it went everywhere from there because it was really, it shows, the community's interest. It will spread from there. If people actually like it. So that's a good way of measuring user interest in our things is if they spread from Dig. So it's really very valuable to us to see the comments on there and also how far it goes based on that one little action from someone.
Great. Why don't we have a lot of people here, so we're going to go to the next question.
Okay,
a follow-up?
One second follow-up question to that is that how, because you have Dig, Technorati, you have all these sites, and you have Kotaku and Joystick, all these big names, Slashdot, when it comes to websites, what exactly do you find brings up, Gamertag Radio? How do you find that you go from being Gamertag Radio to being, hey, people recognize the name Gamertag Radio?
I mean, we're active. It's just being active, for us.
It's the consistency question. If you can make a blog and produce a bunch of posts, and if they're good and they're high quality, you'll get readers.
Yeah.
It's a pretty, almost a simple metric. It's just a question, it's harder to do than it looks.
Yeah, if you're not active, then of course your hits is going to go down. People are not going to take you serious, so.
Great. Let's go on to the next one.
Hi, my name is Katie, and I'm here with my fiance, who I totally beat into line.
Rock on.
Congratulations.
And I guess my question is something that I've seen in a lot of more mainstream political media, as well as what I hear about the gaming industry, because my fiance talks my ear off about it. At what point do you consider yourself a journalist as a blogger, and how do you conduct yourself differently?
And as for the
industry people, at what point do you consider a blogger a journalist that is worthy of your attention? Because I think that the line between journalist and normal citizen is blurring in a lot of important ways that are really remarkable. But I know gaming journalism is something where I presume none of you have degrees in journalism.
No.
Maybe you do, which
don't.
Would be cool. But most of the people I know are just very well-thought, well-educated people that can write and think.
Here's where, for me, and I don't mean to belittle your question at all because it's the elephant in the room, obviously, but it's a worthless semantic distinction for me. You hear people, you're a blogger, not a journalist, but define journalist. Okay, well, this definition says this, that one says that. I write for hundreds of thousands of readers every single day.
Well, I guess maybe I should have prefaced this with I do definitely consider all of you journalists.
But I'm saying some people don't. But
yeah.
At what point do you? I have writers that work for me that have degrees in journalism. I have writers that have won journalism awards from the AP. I was a carpenter a couple years ago. what's the distinction? You know, there isn't necessarily one. But, you know, people really get uppity about it.
A carpenter? I didn't know that.
You know, it's a carpenter?
How biblical.
Chris is short for Christ, in case you're wondering.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen.
But, so...
And I'm sorry, I just want to jump in for a quick second. What I found, and again, I don't work in PR, but what I found is most people who don't consider bloggers real media or journalists are old school media and journalists.
But I mean, like, when you give them a press pass, for example.
Bloggers? I got a press pass.
Well, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, right. I mean, I personally think bloggers are journalists, sure. I don't care if it's a 14-year-old in his bedroom. That's a journalist to me.
Even if he misspells things?
Not if he misspells things. Then he's dead to
me. I mean, for us, I'm not considering myself a journalist. I'm community. Like, I'm not like Kotaku or Destructoid. Exactly. It's like Destructoid. And so it's like I'm just normal. I mean, I've never been to school for journalism, so it's like, you know, I don't take myself serious like that. So.
Yeah, I'm also not a journalist. There are venues where I act journalistic when I'm freelancing for outlets, when I try to give myself more strict guidelines than I do when I'm posting to Slashdot. But on Slashdot, in no way am I a journalist.
I know that Ubisoft, we work a lot with bloggers as journalists. As far as I'm concerned personally, I figure if they treat themselves as a journalist, then they are. But, you know, it's really up to the person who's writing. Some people don't want to be journalists and they're just posting opinions, and that's fine. Some people want to be, you know, they're citing the facts, they're citing the sources, they're, you know, getting quotes. And if they're treating themselves as a journalist, then as far as I'm concerned, they are a journalist. I'm not in PR, but I know that, like, at Ubisoft, we do find bloggers very important as journalism.
Thank you. We're going to go to the next question.
Hi, my name is Doug Bonham. I've got a perfect follow-up question, actually, for that. I've heard, personally, sports reporters complaining, old-school journalists complaining about bloggers, whereas it seems like in the games industry, the professional writers for all the published websites and bloggers are all considered equal, and it seems to me to be a leg up on the, I guess, catch-all for Web 2.0, for blogging, podcasting, everything else. Do you think that this could help the industry continue growing faster while other entertainment industries and other industries in general will have the guys, you know, the stereotypical old white men sitting in Madison Avenue, like, going, hey, this is what the kids are doing. Let's start doing this.
Well, it's a question of audience, right? So if you look at politics or if you look at sports, you're talking about an older demographic that's not necessarily as comfortable reading blogs every day. So, of course, that you still have an entrenched media that might find the growth of blogs a kind of hostile incoming. Gamers, you know, a room full of people who are in Seattle for a video game convention about a webcomic. So it's obviously a slightly different demographic where, you know, those people are on blogs all day. They're on MySpace. They're on the internets. And they'll read blogs. So, you know, for us, I mean, a lot of times, you know, our blog gets more traffic than the mainstream outlets that are covering video games. And they tip us on their stories and want to get promotion because that's where you find gamers. So it's definitely different. I mean, you look at Dean Takahashi and Mike Antonucci at the San Jose Mercury News, and they both run a blog. Steve Sotillo runs a blog, and Guy Kroll runs a blog. I'm surprised that Seth Schizel of the New York Times doesn't. But, you know, there's not a lot of mainstream writers about video games in the first place, and almost every single one also write a blog. So it's not coincidental.
I think the other thing to point out is that everybody in this room, whether we like it or not, we're getting older. We are consuming with
yourself.
RSS feeds. Yeah, exactly. Except for Christ. We're getting older, so we're not consuming media the same way our moms and our dads did, and that's the reality. So the media, the mainstream media as we know it, is being redefined by what's sitting right here on the panel. That's the reality.
Well, it's being balkanized, too. I mean, it's, you know, outlets like the New York Times don't have the authority in this space that they once had. That authority is being distributed all over the internet.
Sure. Thank you. We'll go to the next question. We only have room for a couple more questions. I'm sorry.
Hi, my name's Adam, and I'm the one who just got owned.
Okay.
And I actually have a much more basic and personal question, and I was just wondering,
Leo.
What does your work day look like? When you wake up in the morning, do you, like, sit down, read 4,000 posts, and then keep working until, you know, the sun goes down, or do you have a more free compartmentalized life where work's over here and your life's over there?
I work way too much, so I don't. Yeah. I'm not probably the right one to answer that.
I hardly sleep.
Retarded.
So
yeah. I think that's a tough question for everybody up here, myself included, because we love what we do so much that work and life really becomes intermingled. Mm-hmm. The first thing I do, I don't want to go in front of everybody, but I mean, I check the blogs first thing in the morning and find out, check my email if something broke or make sure everything's working, and then last thing I do is read my blogs before I go to bed. So it's become compulsive obsessive for me, much to the dismay of my family. So it's I guess if you love what you do, it's hard to define work and life.
To that, I think the most important thing is to make sure you have a space for work and a space for living, because that was the big mistake I made when I first started doing this, was I worked out of my living room, and it was a terrible idea because there shouldn't be a television in the same room where you work. It's basically the mistake I made.
But you're playing games. You're not watching TV, right?
Well, yeah. But having an office is really important.
Yeah, you got to keep a balance. I mean, you do this full-time, right, Grant? Full-time? I mean, for me, I'm doing this, like, for fun. So I have a team. You know, my staff is around here somewhere, right? But they – if I'm at work, right there I have the team, you know, backing me up and, you know, posting the news. So, I mean, before when I started, it was just me, myself, and I. So, I mean, now it's a lot easier when I have a team, so.
Yeah, and part of what I do actually for my job as a community manager is to read blogs. So I mm-hmm. get into work in the morning, and you know I have my bookmarks. I just, you know, Firefox, obviously, just like open new tab, and then just like don't talk to me for the next hour or two, because I need to catch up on everything that's happening, read all of the blogs, read the comments, find out what people are thinking. And then start to kind of organize that and say, by the way, people just said this about the game. They're not very happy. What can we do to fix this? But it really all starts from getting caught up on what's happening in the world of bloggery and going from there.
All right.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, guys. We have to wrap it up, so this is going to be the last question, so I apologize. Sorry. They're kicking us out of the room. There's another session. Go ahead.
My question's for Major Nelson.
Yes.
You spoke of your relationship with bloggers and Sony's failures, and I'm kind of curious, how big of an impact would you say blogs had on Microsoft's response to the Red Rings as opposed to the mainstream media or your own community?
Well, it's always been, I mean, we have always looked at that issue very seriously. We came out, as you know, Peter Moore, before he left, we made the big $1.5 billion commitment to...
1.15.
It's a rounding error.
That's blogs at work.
So we're very focused on it, and it's very important because if it's, again, to the point of what I said earlier, we have a team, the Gamerscore blog, myself, Trixie, a bunch of folks that work in the community. So it's very important. We took a lot of the data, collected it, and we share it with the teams that need to know. So the blogs, just by the token of what we have in terms of our infrastructure at work. We have lunch all the time. We're talking about all the issues. I mean, it's as I said earlier, it's obsessive how much we communicate about what the beat is, what the pulse is in the community.
Yeah, it might be just because we don't see what's necessarily going on, but it seemed kind of like overnight it went from it's a very minor minority, and it went to we have this 3-year warranty now. And
right. Well, also because we wanted to make sure it's not like there's a point where sometimes we can't be as transparent as we like because we're working behind the scenes to make things happen. So we want to make sure that we're doing the right thing, we do all the due diligence, and then, ta-da, 3-year warranty.
Thanks.
It didn't happen that quick, trust me.
Can we let Flynn ask a question?
Sure.
He's back there. He was in line.
Flynn, good to see you.
I
think he should be on.
Flynn.
Yeah. I have actually less question and more comment. I work both ends of the blogosphere, if I can use a really horrible combined word. And I run, my own individual site, which is a very small site, gaygamer.net. But we have a lot of support from the community, which I really appreciate. And I also work for this other larger blog you might know of called Kotaku.com.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just wanted to address a couple of the things that were said. I mean, mm-hmm. When somebody's not here to defend themselves, it's easy to make jokes, and
sure.
We all do, and to stuff like that. But I mean, I work there on the weekends, and I'm pretty separated from the rest of the crew. I mean, I pretty much am the only one there on the weekends, with the exception of another girl who works with me. And I have to say, it's really, sometimes it's very difficult. I mean, I'm expected to produce 12 articles a day on a weekend, on a Saturday or a Sunday. And a lot of times, you know, and I'm sure you guys all know, your mailbox is just full of like tips and things, and you're like going, oh God, I really need something to write about, and you'll find this tip, and somebody will say, hey, look at this picture, it's totally awesome. Well, you don't know where that picture came from, they just sent you a picture. And I know that sometimes, you know, I've posted something, and then I get an email from somebody, we know this came from my site, and we posted it first. And, you know, like Chris said, you go back and you try to fix it, and you know, as much as you can. But a lot of times you just don't know. I mean, I think we all understand that the internet and especially like blogs, it's all very sort of incestuous. I mean, like this is coming from here, it's coming from here, it's coming from here, and sometimes things get a little bit lost in the way.
Yeah, I mean, at Joystick it happens all the time. We just, you know, we try and update. You know,
right, exactly.
This comes from my site. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I try to do the same thing too. And then you know, as far as the, you know, what do you do when you don't have something to write about? And yes, things do get made up sometimes. I mean, you know, personally, on the weekend post, that does not happen on my watch.
That was weekday, so I know.
Yeah. I cannot speak for the weekday.
No.
But, you know, I mean, as far as, like, and I just wanted to comment, like, because this was something else.
I just want to say this. Like, I heard this not only from my experience, but I heard this from a lot of community sites, especially, you know, from the Xbox community. So I'm there, you know, I'm just saying this, you know, I know you were here, so that's why I mentioned
this. Oh,
that,
yeah, so. No, I mean, I'm not defending, I'm just kind of saying, hey, this, you know, this is what's up, at least from my perspective. Mm-hmm. And as far as, like, when you don't have something to write about, I find that I tend to write about things that are, like, my personal experiences with gaming. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I know that, like, I mean, I just didn't hear anybody else mention that, so that was just kind of something I wanted to say. I mean, like, I wrote an article about my parents. I bought my parents a Wii, and they threw a party and invited all their friends.
That was
like
a good
article. Greatest thing that they'd done ever.
Yeah.
And it got so many comments and views, and it was really amazing. And I think that that's sometimes we get so caught up in reporting the news that we forget that sometimes the people, things that people really like to hear are personal experiences.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that.
And you know, I think that's one of the important things about blogs as well that separates it from the things like magazines is that personal element and being able to actually relate to the person who's writing.
Exactly.
You should also plug your blog because it's one of the best game blogs on the net.
Go ahead.
Oh, that one. Yeah, gaygamer.net is
it's
my
awesome.
Blog. Thank you.
For the win.
All right. Cool, man.
All right, well, we're going to end on that. Flynn, thanks so much.
Thank you.
I want to thank all of my panel members, and I want to thank you, the audience, for coming down. I really appreciate it, and we'll see you online.